Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe. And for peace in Europe, currency is very important. And this podcast will now be about the introduction of the euro in Kosovo. Because, surprise, surprise, many might not know, but Kosovo has only one currency, and this is the European currency, and that's the euro. And that was really a very good decision right from the start to go that way. And I will now explain how that happened, why this was the right decision, and why that's a role model for all other European transition economies, and why it is working so well, and why also Kosovo is working so well because of that decision. Was it a conscious decision? Look, in a way, no. There was this was one of the lucky coincidences where people themselves have opted for their own currency, which they trust in. Because obviously in these 90s, when there was apartheid, repression, genocidal kind of terror attacks from the Yugoslavian states against the Albanians, also the currency of Yugoslavia, which was actually one of the worst performing currencies in European history, and to this day is competing with the Belarusian ruble as one of the worst performing currencies in Europe. And I think there's a competition which is the worst, yeah. But recently the dinar is a bit better and more stable, but I will talk about it. But what was the situation? It was that this hyperinflation, and there was at one stage a 5 billion dinar note. It's now for sale when you go on holiday in the summer in Croatia or in Montenegro or in Serbia, or you drive through or you go and this, because it's all very beautiful to visit. It's fantastic winter resorts in Kobaunik and Serbia in the coast in Montenegro. So it's amazing. This is really beautiful. But obviously, when you go to one of the souvenir shops, you will see then everywhere also these mega high billions of worth of nominational value of the 5 billion dinar note. I mean, that's also good. You can then put it on Facebook, and you know, I presented it to my children, and this was always a nice souvenir. But it's a souvenir of hell. It's a terrible thing for the people who had to live with such a currency. Such a terrible currency, which doesn't fulfill any of the functions of a currency, like storing value, being useful to trade your labor, your productivity into goods. No. This was a disastrous form of a currency. And it's clearly that it was also in Kosovo the currency of the occupation regime. And obviously, and the Kosovarians were also not paid in that currency because very few of them were employed by the Yugoslavian states. Partly because they opted out after the crisis of 89 and 91, and also very much after 97, they opted out. They were in the shadow. They didn't want to be part of that suppressor state, but partly also because they were discriminated and excluded from all economic life. So the only option was to earn money abroad. And all who could, and every family tried to have at least one person making it to Switzerland. That's kind of the magic land, the dreamland of the Kosovo Albanians, or also Austria, also Germany, and also obviously America, Canada, and elsewhere in the world. But mostly it is from Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. And so clearly in the German mark developed by the choice of the consumers as the alternative currency to trade, to buy, to work, to save. And it was the German mark which gradually over the 90s developed in the real currency and basically for the Kosovo Albanians in the only currency they wanted to save, work, invest and have and store. And that basically was the choice of the people. And so it happened. Then in 99, after liberation, the choice for the UNMIK authorities, which were set up, that's the United Nations Kosovo mission. So it was very clear what kind of currency. And obviously also by then, the Yugoslavian dinar was no good choice for anybody because it was a terrible currency. It was objectively that the Serbian authorities were keen to overprint it as much as they could to fund their wars of aggression. That's actually also one of the points where the Serbian state, the Yugoslavia, really broke up. It broke up because of this policy. There would have been maybe, with a decent monetary policy, some case for keeping the federation as a very loose federation in 1990. But once they made the big loan of 1.5 billion and then started to mega print the printing machine in Belgrade, that was like a monetary declaration of war. You know, of course, you know, there's many reasons for the breakup of Yugoslavia. But for decision makers in a state, in a federation, in any kind of entity, when you share a currency and the one side prints it fully to pay the wages and salaries and their own investment but on the costs of everybody else, that's of course a kind of monetary declaration of war. And that happened in 91. And obviously, you know, that was one of the things they also didn't want to do from the experience of that moment. But also the European and Western monetary authorities knew exactly how it is in the GDR, in the Western Germany, in the occupation time. Because despite it not being widely discussed, but the reason why the German mark was issued in the year 48, backed to the dollar and backed by the Americans, was that the Soviet occupation authority in Eastern Germany have started the printing machine, woo-hoo, and lived on the cost of the Western taxpayers and paid for the occupation and by very generously printing this occupation mark. And obviously, that was not the plan to leave Mr. Milosevic in power in Belgrade, and at the same time keeping the Yugoslavian dinar in Kosovo, allowing them basically to devalue the currency by just overprinting it massively in Belgrade. And obviously that was not to be for the Kosovo Albanians, but also the international community was not going for it in any case. So the options were maybe the dollar, maybe to print their own currency. But printing their own currency would have been deeply problematic as the status of Kosovo was not really resolved. Yeah? So to have their own currency, to keep the German mark, that would have been maybe an option. And a similar route was taken in Bosnia. I will talk about it. But keeping their own mark as the only one in Europe would have also then necessitated to call it a kind of Kosovo mark, like it was in Bosnia, the Bosnian mark, which was later introduced in 97. Also before already. So, but for that already, you know, there was again the status missing. Similar happened as well in Montenegro, I will talk about it. The situation was then that the authorities from UNMIK, when the German mark was somehow disappearing because of the euro introduction physically in 2002, in January. And so what was the option? So basically there was no real good option for them, but also to change to the euro. And so with the help actually of, everybody understood this logic, and so there was basically with the help of the central bank, European Central Bank, and Kosovo was euroized. 100 million euros were transported to Pristina, to the so-called Central Monetary Authority. And then it was gradually from the beginning of 2002 to the 28th was already the point. And on the 9th of March, the German mark was legally declared no longer the currency of UNMIK. And of the people living there, and then they had to exchange it, obviously. And from that moment on, the euro was the only currency of Kosovo. Obviously, there is in some of the Serb municipalities, to this day, also the Serbian dinar is still used in the north of Kosovo, and in some of the municipalities you can only also pay in the Serbian dinar. That was, why not, it has more or less informally happened, there was no legal basis for that, but this was also because massive transfers from the Serbian state to their communities and to the Serbian communities in pension payments, paying for additional salaries for public servants to keep them there, and so on and so on, and this parallelism is working to this day. And okay, it's not amazing, but it's also not a big problem. The problem, it was more for the people from from this who used then the currency, because the history of the Serbian dinar also after the war has not been very good. Today, 1 euro buys 120 Serbian dinars. And when you imagine that it was once the same like the Macedonian dinar, that is packed at 1 to 60. So it has lost half of the value compared to the Macedonian dinar. So the devaluation in the last, only since the financial crisis, is 100%. And also when you see that the dinar in 94 in the currency reform in Serbia was also pegged to the German mark, like the Bosnian mark is 1 to 1, and now it's 1 to 120. Yes, sir. So no, it's even worse. I mix it up. It's even worse. It's 120 to the euro. It's 240 to the mark. Wow. I even learned something during my podcast. Oh man, it's so bad. So I'm really sorry, you know, and when I, for the Serbian consumers, because basically this devaluation policy, it's quite extreme when I think about it, compared to 94, it's such a deep decline. And then again, compared to 2008, losing half its value. And you don't wonder when the Serbs, when they come to work in the summer in Montenegro, for them it's like a paradise, what kind of income opportunities you have in Montenegro and everywhere. And why so many Serbs are leaving? Because if you're not close to the government, you don't have any kind of public position or procurement, or you can make some illegal, corruptive, collusive deal, then you are on this kind of general public payment, which is really very bad. It's very sad. It's exactly the consequence of this constant devaluation, overprinting, inflation, and all these negative policies. I mean, really, when you think about it, and you know, when you're a teacher in Serbia compared to a teacher in Montenegro, you probably earn about half today. It's a misery, yeah? And you know, the prices are also the same in a way. So this devaluation was also very unfair, let's never forget. Also, because in some areas, then of course, the export industry, mostly the defense industry, and some of the export industry Serbia has, and that's of course then extremely cheap compared to the Bosnian export industry or the Albanian or the Croatian export industry. And you see, it's really a terrible policy. And anyhow, let's not talk too much about the Serbian dinar. I hope it will disappear very soon and the Serbia will also adopt the euro and come to a reasonable European clean currency policy. And the success is quite striking, because for all history, the Southern Balkans and Bosnia were the really very poor parts of former Yugoslavia. Because why it is like this? Because this part, like Bosnia, and I call it the hard currency part. Now, of course, Slovenia is already in the euro, and Croatia is already coming very soon into the eurozone. And now, but this hard currency block, it's Bosnia, it's Kosovo, Montenegro, and it's Macedonia. And these four countries are the hard currency block in the Balkans already since the wars, since 97 in Bosnian case, but also in Macedonian as well. And since 99, when they started with the mark for Montenegro and for Kosovo. And this hard currency block has developed much better. But always understand that the rich and industrial parts of former Yugoslavia was clearly Central Serbia. Central Serbia has this big metropolis and also the most of the energy assets, most of the defense and industrial assets. There were some kind of other assets, mostly not working for political reasons, giving to the other republics. But most of the real important and good industry was kept very close for the Serbian population to have the best benefits. And this, of course, Serbia has inherited in the breakup. But what they have done out of it? Today, a lot of pollution, a lot of corruption, a lot of collusion, because the currency framework was a disaster. And obviously the currency framework is a result of this failed political, they have never really reoriented their policy to the West. But the hard currency block has, of course, also taken a hit because of the constant decline of the Serbian dinar, now the before the Yugoslavian dinar. And luckily, they have escaped the terrible currency. And yes, okay, let's focus on Kosovo again. Kosovo did the most courageous thing, and that is the Euroization. But it was less of a courageous decision by the Kosovo Albanians. They opted for the mark, and then the authorities of the international UNMIK staff, they have made this decision to Euroize then exactly 9th of March to be the celebration day. What happened then? And it's very important. From that moment, every euro which was invested in Kosovo, no matter of remittances from the Kosovo Albanians, from Germany, or the massive donor influx of the international community, or also the foreign direct investment. Nothing was in that sense lost in a devaluation or in high inflation. Of course, you know, it took 2 years to adjust the price-wage system, but since then, the Kosovo financial system is stable. It's stable even to the financial crisis. There was no devaluation, obviously. There was also no high inflation. There was no overprinting of money. There was decency in the financial fundament of the state, of the new formed state. And also in 2008, there was no debate about having a own currency, the Tartania and everything else some people proposed. It was never any feasible idea because the euro is so attractive. Because Kosovo Albanians work in the eurozone, send the money back in euro, and the financial system, which is also euroized from the beginning according to European standard built up, and mostly banks from the eurozone like Raiffeisen, ProCredit Bank and some others, all in all 7 banks, all from international, from eurozone countries. They have established their business according to European regulation, so everything was safe. Obviously, some investors might have lost money in some business risk and some business dealing. That's very regrettable. But there was not this kind of general devaluation investing in the soft quicksand of an ever lower currency, which we have seen so decisively going wrong in Belarus, in Ukraine, in partly as well in Georgia, Moldova, but also even in Bucharest, in Romania in 2008. So many of the European investments have gone sour by all these currencies losing so much value. And then it's always the, but the competitiveness level, yeah, the competitiveness. You know, tell this story to somebody who invested $1 million in Romania and then it was only worth $500,000 later. So anyhow, maybe it was very competitive, I hope so. But it's a disaster, these devaluations. And for small open economies, it's completely wrong when they're highly integrated in the European Eurozone to have this flexible kind of ever-declining devaluation strategy towards the euro because it keeps the consumer and most of the middle class forever poor. And just a few oligarchs can develop decently because they control the key export assets via their state links and the political collusion. And it's that kind of constant devaluation and the high inflation environment which also fosters this kind of protective, state collusive, corruptive system. And so that's why I'm also so convinced calling all the time for Ukraine, Georgia, Moldova to follow the Kosovo model, or I always use the Montenegro term because they still have, unfortunately, to their own structural weakness is not recognized Kosovo as an independent republic, which actually they should do and also study because the Kosovo success, because in fact Kosovo was much more successful because of that currency stability, because it's not just a minor issue. Every economic transaction happens in a currency. If the currency is stable, the whole economic life works much better because you have trust in the future. You also have no less risk, obviously, with your investment. You can focus on your business risk. That means what kind, where you invest your money. But that every investor has anyhow to take care that you do that wisely. But for the currency, you can change nothing as an individual investor. And you are dependent on the macroeconomic political framework. and that was stabilized by the Kosovo authorities in 2002 and by the Kosovo Albanians by using the mark by themselves already during the apartheid regime. So let me also talk about the issue. I have talked, or I think, about the Serbian dinner, how terrible it is that Montenegro did the same, also Euras. Macedonia has backed the currency, worked also much better, and also Bosnia has backed the currency. So you have these four central states in former Yugoslavia which have a very successful currency politics. Obviously, it would be better for Bosnia to adopt the euro as well now, follow the Montenegro-Kosovo model, and also for Macedonia to adopt the euro, and then to speed up the EU integration, because still it helps very much to have the same currency. Obviously, it's not solving all the problems, because also with the euro, for example, the interest rates in Kosovo have been very high, sky high, above 15, 18, like they are in Ukraine for so long, and now Ukraine is getting a bit better. But in Kosovo, it's now relatively low already. And why it was necessary or possible to justify such high interest rates for so long? Obviously, because there was still considerable political risk, even with the euro. There was also considerable risk for in the judiciary, in the cadastre data, which is so important in the interest rates, the court system, for example, then the debt collection system, and the property rights system that needed also time to adjust. And today it's much more decent than it ever was. It's still not as good as Macedonia, which has the best system. And I was actually very much advocating for adopting the Macedonian model in Kosovo, because they have the best digitalized cadastre system and the best the system of property rights in Europe, to my best knowledge. And that's really amazing. So, Macedonian cadastre, one of the things. I have talked already about it. But obviously, with the euro, a major progress was possible, and major also inflows of the diaspora investment, because they could be sure, if they, for example, buy an apartment for whatever, for 750 euros per square meter, that's about the market value today, they can be sure it will be 750 plus, plus, plus the normal market value increases. But then didn't lose money. And that's, of course, a wonderful thing. And you cannot say the same from other countries. Obviously, in property, it's often already valued in euros, most of the European periphery, because of this kind of unreliability of the local currencies. So even the developers often price their apartments in euros in order to have transparency, but also have accuracy and reliability over the long term on property prices. So, honestly, I know there is a lot of people who think their patriotism depends on having a currency, like the British, for example, or also in people in Ukraine and in Serbia. They give me a lot of negative comments on that one. But I'm not getting tired to say if your identity, your national identity depends on some paper with some faces of old kings on, well, then it's not a lot of identity to be proud of, to be honest. Yeah? A national identity you can have in books, in museums, in achievements of your nation, in famous inventors and historians and great authors, and the achievement of a nation to provide decent living standards. I think that's the most important achievement of a nation. Great warriors of the past? Naja, you can be proud about your warriors of the past and about your achievements in the past, no doubt. I'm also a patriot of Austria, and that's fine. Why not to be proud of the good things? But the most important reason why we have states is not to be proud about some past kings, but it's proud to be about the present living conditions for all people and to have really decency in welfare and in economic opportunity in a country. Some kind of decent standards. I think that is what everybody wants. And with a decent currency, it's much better. It's much better. I want to compare as well Georgia with Kosovo because I love both countries, obviously. And Georgia is in the reforms because of this Rose Revolution and Chakashvili much more advanced, because in Kosovo it was not easy to reform the doing business and a lot of complexities. Wherever Kosovo has made big progress in the last years, yeah. But of course, Georgia is the best, even globally. But even Georgia, when you see in euros expressed or in dollars, GDP per capita, it's about the same result. And you see 20 years of reforms, it's about the same result. I mean, you can, for me, it's quite obvious that the real difference is that Shakeshvili, he was not ready to back his currency to the euro, because he is so much pro-American and so much free market that he didn't really bother to look to Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, Bulgaria, Macedonia, Bosnia, Kosovo, and Montenegro, which have all made a hard currency policy, which basically also we in Austria have done after the Second World War, and the Germans most famously, and the Japanese. But, you know, when you think that you are a superpower already as Georgia, and you are close to the global takeover, then you go alone and you do a free market, a kind of a free currency, and you think that's the way to do it. No, it's completely wrong. When your future is the euro, then do it now. It's a bit, you know, you have to reform the system, but that's what the Georgians anyhow did. You have also not the ability to devalue it all the time like the Serbians did, yeah, to the detriment of their neighbors and to the detriment of the middle class and of the normal people, because the elite can always fix the system then later and rig the system to their benefit even in a devaluation situation. But the normal people cannot. The teachers and the SMEs and the people who are normally depending on their salaries for their things they have learned or the things they can do with their hands. And these are the people that pay the price. The big businessmen and the big corporates, they can always adjust the prices to the inflationary system, but the normal people cannot. And that's the injustice of the dinar and the hryvnia and the Belarusian ruble and the lari and all the other currencies. And we have much too many currencies anyhow in Europe. In North America, there are exactly three currencies. The US dollar, the Canadian dollar, and the Mexican peso. We have 23 currencies on the European continent outside of Russia. Or is it 26? 23, 26 currencies. I have to count exactly. You know, it's a lot. Are we richer or poorer than North America? By the way, we are just the 2/3 of the prosperity level of North of America. And even when you take Mexico into account, yeah, we are far behind. And one thing is because we are not united enough and we are so diverse, that's nice, yeah, but we don't need 26 currencies in the European continent. It's completely utter nonsense. And if you think that this is a great thing, by the way, information in the European Union, it's obligatory to adopt the euro. There's only Denmark and Sweden as an opt-out, to my knowledge. All other countries have signed up, and all future countries anyhow have to adopt the euro. I think the mood for any exemption for anybody is about zero to minus 1,000 zero. So let's be honest. Let's adopt the euro in all the countries who want to join. If you don't want to join, make it also very clear. It's no problem. You know, at the moment, anyhow, I think I'm the only one who is arguing for enlargement outside of these countries in Austria and in Germany. I hear nobody else. So if you don't want to join in Serbia or in Ukraine or in Georgia, just state it on Twitter, we are out. It's fine. You know, nobody will cry a tear in Vienna, Berlin, or in Brussels. Only me, basically, because I believe in a united Europe built on the firm fundament of the euro, secured by NATO and united in the European Union with all our instruments and the most important one, of course, the euro. And I'm happy the Kosovarians and the Montenegrins have it already. And I call for everybody to take it and to unilaterally do it. And if Brussels and Frankfurt call you excited and stop the funding, complain to Biden and ask for help to help. And he will help. He has also no patience with European particularities and kind of rejectionism of Eastern Europe. but you have to prove that you are pro-European. And if you even don't want the euro and think that the Serbian dinar is the future and the hryvnia is the best, yeah, then you're probably not so good Europeans. So see you later in 100 years. But if you want to be European, just at least say that you want. And if the Europeans reject you, okay, fine. Then call Biden. But not wanting the euro, it's also completely confusing for me. I hardly can understand it. Anyhow, bravo Kosovo, well done in 2002 on the 9th of March. Celebrate the end of the mark, the beginning of the euro as a full currency in Kosovo every single day. It's the firm fundament of European future of Kosovo. And at least this one is really perfect in Kosovo. Congratulations to my friends in Kosovo. Bye from Vienna.